Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Gloria Battini. Gloria is going to share with us her real deal life story. She says she turned her life around after being in an abusive relationship for almost 15 years. After 18 months of inner work, she felt strong, whole, empowered, and free, and couldn't help but think, what if all women could experience this? Gloria is now an emotional wellness coach who helps women heal from breakup to breakthrough. Let's see how this spirals out. Welcome, Gloria.
Hello. Hi, Jane.
All the way from England.
Indeed.
So, hun, you know, many of the harshest things that happen to us make us stronger. And they sharpen the knife and all these things. And often through them, we discover our own soul purpose. I know from my own experience that it's actually led me closer to who I am. Do you have a similar story?
Yeah, I 100% have. Yeah. And I love the way you said it, that it connects us to our soul purpose. Yes, because when you're going through that experience, you feel so lost and you feel so overwhelmed and overcome by everything. But then when you're out and you are healing and you have perhaps, you know, you're far, far along in the healing journey, you're like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's when it becomes like super beautiful. But yes, I do have indeed a story like that. I was in a relationship for about 15 years. With a narcissist, and it was a very abusive, emotionally and mentally abusive relationship. The relationship was started when I was 18 and I left when I was 32. So I found that what really made a difference there for me was those very formative years. You know, in your 20s, you're supposed to figure out, you know, who you are as a woman. You know, you're supposed to figure out who you're going to become as an adult. You know, what do you want to do? What your purpose, for example, is going to be, you know. But no, I was going through something like completely different. I was going through severe anxiety, OCD, very abusive partner who he gaslighted me into thinking stuff that didn't happen, or when I saw stuff happen and I tried to bring it up, he would just say that I'm just imagining it. And I was super overcome with OCD, and for years I thought that my OCD had to do with a very stressful job, because I had a great career in events. I used to work in central London, and I was doing events here, and I did that for about 10 years. And so I thought, you know, events is a very demanding industry, it's very fast paced, and London within itself is just very fast paced in general. So I thought, I blamed it on that. But then years later, during my healing, I realized that no, my OCD was indeed definitely to do with the relationship. Yeah, 100%.
Right. And often you get stuck there because you think it's normal, or that you'll overcome it and things will change and, you know, it'll all get better. But still, there's that constant anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I started with anxiety, and then it turned into OCD. And when it turned into OCD, it would take hours of my day, because I don't know if you're familiar with OCD or any of the listeners are, but it's obsessive compulsive disorder, which is an anxiety disorder. And basically, in order for you to have a sense of control, you need to perform certain rituals, like with, you know, in certain times, and certain amount of time. So like, say, for example, I would have to check the door, you know, X amount of times in the morning and in the evening. I would have to do, you know, certain sequences, you know, and I would, and how I would do my routine and my actions and stuff like that. And it got to a point where I was standing there ready to go take the bus in the morning to go to work. And it would just take me 45 minutes to leave the house because I just had to do all those things. But I was so lost that that was the only thing that made me feel like I had some sort of control over something, you know?
Yeah. And it would set you up so that you were okay.
Yeah, correct.
Can you just describe your ritual, just to share that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
of course. So I had rituals. I mean, I had little things throughout the day, like small ones, but the main ones were in the morning before going out to work and in the evening before going to bed. Because I felt that if I did it in the evening, then I could make sure that the day after was going to be a good day, right? And nothing bad would happen. That's the control that you want to have. And then in the morning, same thing. I wanted to make sure that before I left the house, everything was going to be okay. But in the morning, I would have to, so I had cats. So I would have to go and take the cats and put them in the living room and just say bye to them, to each one of them, like, you know, three times in like in a very like specific sequence, you know. And then if I couldn't find the cats, that was like, you know, anxiety through the roof because of that, because I didn't have the control of doing that. And I wasn't able to leave the house until it was all done. Then I had to put my jewelry on in a certain way. So before leaving the house, I would have my jewelry on my dressing table, and it had to go on in a certain sequence, right? And if I was thinking of something and I didn't do it the right way, I would take everything off and start again. You know, then I would have to check the curtain. I would have to check the doors to the balcony, and, you know, all those kind of things, one after the other. And it piled up, and it came literally to about 45 minutes in the morning. And in the evening, it was about, again, checking the door, checking the curtains, putting on my pajama in a certain way, making sure that I was doing certain things before going to bed. You know, it was very, I thought that it was keeping me in control. It was not. It was controlling me. That's what I didn't realize at the time.
Right. And in time you did. And you're not alone. There's so many that, you know, this is how they cope.
So,
Gloria, back up to, you know, how you first realized that the relationship was, well, you probably didn't realize it first, right? Can you just back up in hindsight and how you got caught in it and what it was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was bullied a lot when I was growing up. And when I met this guy when I was 18, all I wanted was to be loved. And, you know, part of the narcissist cycle is to love bomb you at the beginning. So they literally shower you with this thing that you think is so unique, and you think it's just, oh my God, this person sees me, you know. It's not, but I didn't know that. So the love bombing phase lasted a very long time. And at least a good couple of years. And then he started doing, then when I felt comfortable enough to, you know, open up, share my vulnerabilities and all this, share, you know, more intimate things about my life and stuff, that's when it started, when he started sort of the second phase of the cycle, which was de-evaluation. And that's what lasted a very long time. So he would just say things like, he would do really, really harsh jokes. So, you know, make fun of something that was, I don't know, something about my body or something about something I was doing, you know, that I didn't initially find as a red flag, because I thought, oh, he's just, you know, he's just joking. You know, we're just funny like this, you know, we're just joking. But no, that was definitely not the case. Then he this is what happened. You always have that voice within that is like, don't do it. Don't go there. Don't go there. There's something that's not convincing. The voice is always there. But you think like, no, I can help this person. You know, and I could see that he had a very troubled relationship with his mom, a very dysfunctional relationship with his mom. And I said, oh, this is why he's probably like this. You know, I didn't know what this was, you know, but I said, oh, this is probably why sometimes he has this kind of behaviors. And I thought for a very long time that I could help him. But little did I know. And it became, it completely overcame me. I broke up with him after 5 or 6 years, I think that was. And he knew that I wanted to go live abroad, but I wasn't prepared to do that on my own. And to get me back, he said, okay, we're moving away. If we get back together, we can move away to London or New York. We wanted to go to New York at the beginning, but you need like sponsorship and stuff like that. So it was much, much easier for us in Europe. So, I'm Italian. So it was much easier to choose London. And so that's how he got me back. And then when we came to London, there was another small phase of about a year or so of love bombing again to make sure that I was, again, trusting him. And he was showing me that he was changing. He wasn't, but, you know, he was the love bombing thing again. And then it just went all down. And in the meantime, I had agreed to marry him. And I was just so overcome with everything. But I realized that I was so busy with trying to figure out this life abroad, away from my family, building a career, that I think that my subconscious wasn't ready to see the relationship yet. You know, it just wanted to make sure that I built something for myself and my career first. And then when that happened, that I, after years, I realized this anxiety and this OCD, then I went to ask for help for a coach, but not for the relationship. I went to ask for help for OCD. So I was convinced for a lot of years that my relationship was just, you know, ups and downs. Every relationship has ups and downs and this kind of stuff. So then I went to see a coach for my OCD. And I still remember the first session that I had, she asked me questions about my past and everything. And she said, so how's your relationship? And I said, oh, thank God I have. You know, I said, oh, he's the first person who understands me. You know, there's ups and downs, you know, everything, but who doesn't have ups and downs? Literally, like this was my conversation. And then fast forward a year, working on this anxiety, working on this OCD, I literally had halved the OCDs that I had. And that allowed me, you know, if your brain is occupied fully with anxiety and OCD, and then you work on it for a year and it halves, the half that becomes free, it's suddenly seeing clear. And that's where I literally became aware of the seriousness of the stuff that I was living. And still, it took me another 9 months to actually leave the relationship.
Yeah. So what were the first things that you saw?
I was just starting to see, him more rationally. I think that that getting rid of the OCD so much brought back this rational thinking. And it just made me, so when he tried to gaslight me, I would be like, no, this doesn't work like this. And I would actually not fall for the gaslighting. I would just stand up for myself. And that's when he started having arguments, and the arguments were longer and longer and longer. We started having arguments that were like 5 hours long because I wasn't backing up. I wasn't just saying, oh yeah, you're right, I just have anxiety. You know, at that point I was standing up for myself, and that's the argument that really was like, come on, how can somebody argue for 5 or 6 hours? And that's what really, you know, and from there I would get upset because of the arguments, because I didn't want to spend a life arguing. And then that led me to open my eyes to other things.
Yeah.
You know, he used to never come to bed to sleep with me. He just used to be on the sofa for his own choice. He was just on the computer all night, whatever it was doing, I don't know. But I always thought, oh, he has insomnia, you know. But then after I opened my eyes and I became, you know, rational, I said, that's, even if you have insomnia, that doesn't mean, you know, that's not right. You cannot not come to bed 364 days a year. Just come to bed once. It's not possible that it's that much. Yeah. So that made me even more upset, because I was like, I don't want to spend marriage on my own. I don't want this life. So that was another thing. And then things started to really like pile up and stand up, you know, stood out for me. And until I got to the point where I was like, no.
So yeah, with that kind of person, you label them a narcissist. Mm-hmm. So they can do cruel things to you or say cruel things, but it's almost life-threatening for them to admit that they were wrong. Is that what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. A narcissist is convinced that what they're doing is right.
Mm-hmm.
So they are convinced that, I mean, the most shocking thing for me out of the whole thing was a month after I left, I received a text message. First of all, he would not stop texting after I left. It was days of, you know, a message every like 10 minutes, all day, every day. And one day I was like, I completely am losing you. You're the most important thing in my life, you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. And the day after, I was like the worst in the world. You know, it's all your fault. It's just very like this, you know. Sorry, where I was going with this?
I've lost it. Well, you were just saying that he would text you constantly. Like when you left, he wanted you back desperately because that meant that he was okay or that he'd done nothing wrong. Do you think that's what it was about?
Yeah. Well, it's about control for a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
It's about control. So if I left, it means that he didn't have any control over me.
Right.
So he can lose that. But I was saying that what was really shocking to realize is when one day I received a text message from him saying, I knew everything that I was doing to you. I knew that if I would argue for hours and hours, you would get to the point that your anxiety was so high that you would just give up for your own safety. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And he literally used the words, I did that because I wanted to win. And that for me, reading that, oh good. I was like, no. Thank goodness I'm out. Like, I was super, super obviously happy of my journey and my decision. And then 2 days later, I can't remember what we were talking about. So I remember I had to go in the old house to pick up some stuff for myself because I was the one who wanted to move out because I didn't even want to be in the house anymore. I didn't want to have those memories around me. I just wanted to start fresh. And I remember I had to go back to pick up something and I had to call him. And he started arguing again about something. And I remember bringing up the text and I said, what are you doing? Why are you still arguing if you just sent 2 days ago a text like that? And he said, I never sent it. And I am there on the phone looking at the text. I was like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? And that's when I just thought, yeah, right, fine. This is a different level. This is just not the... This isn't just a marriage that didn't work. This is like deep, troubled. This is abuse. This is, yeah. That's when I really woke up to it. Yeah.
So gaslighting is when they make you feel like you're the insane one, that you are confused, right? And that's what you would do when you confronted him with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So for example, before I was working on my IT with my coach, I would just go to him and, for example, question something about our finances, right? I would say, oh, how come, you know, you said this was going to get paid or, you know, whatever you discussed in the marriage about finances and bills and stuff like that. And he obviously had stuff to hide, which I then found out later. And he would just tell me, no, that's not how it happened. That's not what happened. And I would say, no, I'm pretty sure that that's not what happened. We just need to, you know, fix it. And he would say, no. You see, you're always so anxious. You're so anxious that you can't see those things. And then obviously I did suffer with anxiety and OCD. So I would be like, well, am I anxious then? Is this due to my anxiety? And then obviously, because when you're there and you don't know what's happening to you, you are convinced that this person loves you, right? So you're like, well, actually, yeah, he knows me. He's probably right. My anxiety is all over the place. And you dismiss it yourself. But in reality, it's not what it is. In reality, they are covering up something that they did. And they're just dismissing your reaction because they're getting caught.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
In hindsight, you can see it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I can. But this is the thing. Soon after I told you, like, probably 12 months down the line of working on my OCD and gaining that clarity, the more I was doing those things, the more I was raising those issues. And he would just be like, you have anxiety. I'd be like, I don't that much now. So I know that what I'm saying has a base. I know that I am telling the truth. I know that this is how it's working. Yeah. And that's when he would argue and argue and argue and flip the argument like left and right all the time until we were there for hours and hours. And he would take it to like things that we weren't even talking about to just confuse me immensely until I got to a point where I would be, do you know what? I don't even know why we started an argument now. I just want the argument to end, you know?
It becomes so convoluted, you don't even know where it started.
No, exactly. Yeah. So what's the point? Yeah.
So in hindsight, what are the red flags?
Yes, yeah, so the red flags. So the love bombing is a massive red flag. And when they try to get too close too soon, I interpreted that as obviously as being bullied and as a person who had been bullied with a low, very low self-esteem. To me, it was heaven because I thought, oh, this person sees me. I interpreted that as genuine interest because that's what I wanted. Does that make sense? That's what I needed. That's what I wanted to see.
Well, yeah, you think you've met your soulmate. You think you've met the first person that understands you and gets you. And this is it. You know, there's someone on earth.
That's and exactly how I thought.
You think it does exist, Gloria, that there is that kind of relationship that works out well?
Yes, absolutely. There can be relationships that work extremely well. But I'll tell you what needs to happen in order for a relationship to work well. You need to put yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key for a relationship to work. And I'll tell you why. Because if you put yourself first, you are able to see what's wrong, if there is something wrong. So if you put yourself first, you are able to see any toxic behavior, any unhealthy thing that are happening because your needs are taken care of. Your needs are looked after, right? But also, if the relationship is healthy, by putting yourself first, you are actually able to give more to the other person. Because you're caring for yourself first. And I mean, just imagine if all your needs were met. If you are completely happy within yourself, do you give the same, is your quality of time, quality of interaction, level of wanting to interact with the other person the same as if you are not looking after yourself? Probably not.
Right? That's the key. Because if you're totally whole within yourself, you're not actually, you wouldn't do that to someone else because you'd give them their space and trust in who they are. And I mean, even in, you know, everyday things, I know to do that. So yeah, that's a huge red flag, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you said a very good thing there. You said, if you feel whole, and this is the thing that we get from society, that a relationship is your other half, right?
Yeah.
let me tell you, everyone who is listening, there's no halves. Like, you are born whole. There is no halves. You're not half of ever of anything. You are whole. And you must nurture yourself first. And then having the relationship, that's the added value of life, the healthy relationship. But it comes only after you have looked after yourself and you have nurtured that relationship with yourself. When I was 18 and I fell into this narcissistic, into this relationship with this narcissist, I had just come out of severe bullying. I didn't feel like I was whole. I had the whole healing from the bullying to do, and I still felt like it was somebody else, that I needed to receive this love from somebody else, because all the bullying made me think that I wasn't good enough. So I felt, oh, this person can complete me, right? This mm-hmm. person is what I need to be happy. No. The only person that you need to be happy is you, nobody else.
Yeah. So anyone in that situation, that would be your advice. Like, don't jump into something like that. Heal yourself first.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Heal yourself first. And in terms of red flags, yes. So definitely the love bombing is a huge, huge red flag. Also lying, being deceitful. That's another one. And that your instinct will be able to tell you that. You know, if you have worked on yourself and everything, you know if somebody's standing in front of you and they're lying. And that's another massive red flag. Never taking responsibility. So if you say that something, you know, a healthy relationship, you can go to your partner and say, look, that thing that you just said, that hurt me a bit. I'd rather you not do it or you not say it. Because everybody can make a mistake. Somebody, you know, we say so many things, we don't know if we're going to hurt somebody or not. Sometimes the most, you know, we perceive things in very different ways. So anybody can make a mistake and say something that's going to offend somebody else. But it's the reaction to that that is going to show you whether you're in a healthy or unhealthy relationship. Because if the person goes completely defensive and if they don't validate the way you're feeling, if they don't apologize, if they don't have any sort of like remorse, it's very unhealthy. But if you go to the person and say, look, maybe you didn't mean it, but that thing that you just said actually hurt me. And if the person in front of you says, oh my goodness, I had no idea, actually, I never saw it that way, I'm really sorry, it's not going to happen again. And then it doesn't happen again, then that's helpful.
Yeah. It's a really good sign.
Yeah, it's a really good sign. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I think I've been through many relationships in my past lives, like you're talking about. And mm-hmm. in this one, I chose a good partner. I can get just, you know, when I'm hurt, I can be so honest. And every time he says, he just honestly sits back, takes it to heart, and then changes or does what he needs to do. And I just so appreciate it.
Yeah. It's absolutely true. It's the fact that, you know, the key is that the narcissist in a relationship is not in love with the person. They are in love with the supply. For them is a question of power. For them being in that relationship, they gain something from it. Either the satisfaction of having control, or the fact that they can see you in love with them and they can, you know, fulfill their ego or their grandiosity ideas, whatever that is. But for them, it's never about the person. In a healthy relationship, it is about the person, because you genuinely appreciate and you're in love with another human being. So if that person, you know, you want to make them happy, a narcissist doesn't want to make you happy. They want to make themselves happy. And they are never happy anyways. They're not doing a great job at that, you know.
Yeah. And any hindsight in what makes them become, you know, this kind of narcissist? I don't know if there's another way to say it. Do you think it's trauma in their own childhood or too much are they glorified too much in their childhood? I've often, you know, I've heard both.
Yeah. It can be both. It definitely has a lot to do with their childhood. But it also, I've done obviously a lot of research on the subject. It can also be genetic sometimes. But a lot of it is definitely childhood, the relationship they have in childhood. It could be the relationship that they have experienced in childhood. So what they have witnessed, you know, what they have seen between parents, how they treated each other. But it could also be, like you said, being, you know, we call it the glorified, the golden child and the scapegoat. So the being the golden child and the child that can never do anything wrong. You know, everything they do is perfect. And they grow up with this idea, unrealistic idea, because nobody in life can ever be completely perfect. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, it's impossible to do everything perfect all the time. And I don't think that's even the point of life, to be honest. So that there's this experience on one side, and on the other side is the scapegoat, which is the child that is blamed with everything all the time. And both those things, even if you think that the golden child might have it easier, both those things are deeply traumatic for a person, both of them.
Yeah, because if you are put on a pedestal for someone to criticize for the first time, it's almost life threatening. And there's so much pressure to stay on that pedestal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to be human is not to be perfect, you know? None of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's much healthier to realize that.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is the thing, it gets so engraved in their brain. It is literally a personality disorder. That's their character. That's who they are. Mm-hmm. And you know what we fail to realize a lot of the time, and that's what I failed to do as well. Obviously, I didn't have the information at the time when I was in this relationship. I didn't know that I was experiencing narcissistic abuse, but I saw something there that was troubled, and I thought, oh, I can help this person. You know, had I known that was narcissistic abuse and that was narcissistic personality traits or personality disorder, you know, a lot of the people think, oh, I can help them. In reality, we must stop doing that, because that's not something you can help. You know, it is a personality disorder. And I'm going to give you an example here, because I think it's really key to how we see this. If you came across someone with multiple personality disorder, you wouldn't expect them to behave normally, right? Mm-hmm. Because you knew that they have a specific disorder, right? But what is different with the narcissist is that we know that they're a narcissist, and still we expect them to have empathy. We expect them to behave normal. We think that we can help them. We can't. So we must start seeing this for what it is.
Yeah. And then if you layer on the love bombing that happens initially, you must be a bit addicted to that feeling, right? Which must make it very difficult. And you must truly love them. Like you think you do.
You do. Yeah. You do. You absolutely do, because you are manipulated into that. What they do is a very deep mental manipulation, and the cycle that they take you through. So is the love bombing, then there's the devaluation, and then there's the discard. And the discard sometimes can happen without them not even breaking up with you. I, for example, the discard for me happened when he just completely never came to bed with me, to sleep in the same bed. That was just complete discard, right? But I was still married and I was still in the relationship. So this cycle, and what they do, they pick it up. So they would have periods of time where they start the love bombing again, because they see you that maybe you are getting suspicious, or you are sort of distancing yourself a little bit. So they feel that they might lose the supply. So they start the cycle again. So they start the love bombing again, just to keep you happy. And then after a while, they go again, devaluation and discard. And then it starts again. And then this is super dangerous because, first of all, it's deep emotional and mental manipulation. But also, like you said, it makes you addicted to the cycle itself. So you know that even when you feel discarded, even if you're in the phase where they're discarding you, you still deeply hope, and you know it's going to happen, that they will start love bombing you again soon because you want to feel that feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I can imagine the reaction to pull away is even so that you can get the love bombing again, because you know that's what they'll do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that super deep manipulation causes you to then associate love with that cycle. Mm-hmm. And that's the really dangerous thing, because then you come out of that and you have no idea. You're like, what have I just experienced? I don't know who I am anymore. What is love? And it's really hard. And this is why people, when they've experienced this kind of relationship, they keep falling into the same kind of relationship, because they think, or not they think consciously, but because their brain has been manipulated and conditioned into associating love with that cycle.
Yeah.
So that's what they keep experiencing.
Yeah. And you were pretty young when it first happened and had been through some trauma, right? So yeah, your brain can so easily get programmed and addicted to this feeling of love bombing.
Yeah.
And wanting it back so desperately.
Mm-hmm.
So how does one break from this?
So there's very different things. First of all, you have to have the awareness, because there are a lot of people out there who are experiencing this and they have no idea that it's happening to them. And this is the main reason why I'm here. This is the main reason why I do what I do. It's because it's not talked about enough. People don't understand it. People don't know what narcissistic abuse is. They don't know what it feels like. And when you're in it, it's very isolating, which is, by the way, part of the tactic of a narcissist to isolate you from the rest of the world. But
in isolating, you mean keeping you from friends and other relationships,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So as I said, yes, so you must have the awareness first. And this is why we have to keep talking about it, because it's so engraved in society, so accepted, that it's really, really scary. And this doesn't only happen in intimate relationships. This is parent children. This is workplace. This is friendships. Mm-hmm. Siblings. It's literally everywhere. And so first of all, you have to have that awareness. And then once you become aware of it, there are different things that you could do. I would definitely suggest research, listen to other people's stories, see what they've done, see what feels right for you. But definitely, we were saying it earlier, didn't we, Jane, that listening to other people's stories can be very empowering and very inspiring to sort of start seeing what can be possible for you. So
yeah,
there's plenty of people. Yeah.
And just to know you're not alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And that will speed up the process so much for you, 100%. And then you can do different things. So you can either go complete cold turkey and just get out and literally pack your bags, don't say anything, and just walk out. Or you can prepare yourself to leave, which is what I did. I was not in the mental and emotional space to just walk out, especially after being in a marriage and after being in a relationship for 15 years. I had to prepare myself. And the way you prepare yourself is to start putting yourself. And it doesn't mean making huge changes. You know, now when I say now, 5 years down the line, when I say I put myself first, I mean that I have a 2-hour long morning routine, that I go to the gym every morning, that I eat healthy, that I do the things that I want to do. But it wasn't like this. you know, 5 years ago when I was in that relationship. 5 years ago, putting myself first meant that I cut out 1 hour on my commute to work where I was just reading. And for me, reading creates a deep connection within myself. I always loved reading since I was a young kid. That was an hour. That was putting myself first, you know? So just cut out some time for yourself and try to reconnect to what makes you feel good first. You know, whether you want to go, as I said, whether you want to take a bath every day for half an hour, or whether you want to sign up to some sport class once or twice a week, or you want to paint or read, whatever that is, cut out a small amount of time that is just for yourself. And that will help you reconnect to your true self, which is super important. It will help you nurture the relationship with yourself and will help you cultivate that self-love, which with time will take you to a place where you are then more confident, you've raised your self-esteem, and you are ready to move on and leave. So that's the preparing.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, you like what you say is just to reconnect with who you are, because through this anxiety and ritual, you're in such a state of anxiety that it almost chews up your day, like you said, and there is no time to connect to who you are.
Yeah. No. So, and even if it's 15 minutes, even if you decide that for 15 minutes in the morning, you do just something that is just for you, whatever that is, do that, even if it's just 15 minutes. Don't worry about the time, because the time will grow as you grow. You know, the time that you take for yourself, the time that, because once you get used to those 15 minutes, you're going to want half an hour, and then you're going to want an hour, and then you're going to want two. And that's how you nurture that relationship with yourself, which is so important.
Yeah. And can it be also just doing something you love that's, you know, productive and feeding your soul in a way, you know, contributing back to life and soul purpose? And I often find my darkest ways out are I ask, how can I help? What can I, you know, and it just feeds the progress and opens doors. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely, immensely. Yeah, 100%. Living is giving.
Jen. Yeah, and that's what you're doing now. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I am truly a woman on a mission, honestly. I think that this, I mean, any kind of abuse, but obviously this is what I've experienced. And I believe that it's so scary because you're not just, it's not one thing. It's literally a lot of people. It's a lot. It's a huge portion of humanity. It's something that people don't understand. And it keeps happening.
Right. And it is huge. Do you find just not looking for approval in others, like only looking inside, is key?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. That's key to so many things. You know, it is, you know, when you're healing within the narcissistic abuse scenario, there's a lot of shame involved. And the shame comes not from you, but it comes of what society tells you that's right and wrong, right? So if you keep looking for the validation outside, you will keep feeling the shame. But once you look inward and you just validate yourself and you give your time yourself, that's a game changer.
Yeah, a real game changer. Mm-hmm. So what else do you teach?
So I work with mainly women, but I work with men as well, but the majority are women. And I have both one-to-one coaching, which is obviously being on a one-to-one basis is a much more tailored approach, but I do strongly believe in the power of community and in the power of not doing this kind of journey alone. So I also have a membership for survivors, which is basically women who have been through emotional abuse, narcissistic abuse, and mental abuse, and now are in their healing journey. And they just heal together. You know, it's a membership-based. There's a part of it which is self-paced, where I upload content every month. There's a theme every month that we have, and we work on that theme. And obviously, all the themes, all the monthly themes, are very, very targeted to things that happen during the emotional abuse and narcissistic abuse. And each month is literally targeted to heal one part of that. But the difference is that you do it in a group of people. So there's a group chat that we have, and if somebody is having a down moment and it's like, oh, I went no contact with the narcissist, but I'm so tempted to message them again. You know, a lot of the people outside that don't know what you're experiencing, they can't really understand if you say something like that. But when you come to the group, you have a group of people there that are like, come on, they know exactly what is going on in your head at that moment. And it's so powerful because they can literally take you out of it immediately, you know, and you're no longer doing this work alone. We have a coaching call every month as well together. It's a really, really powerful community. And I love that because, you know, when I looked back, I said, what would have made it all easier? And it's what you said a few times today. Fact that the feeling of not being alone, and that's why I wanted to create something like that. And I use, obviously, I'm a certified life coach, but I use meditations, I use elements of NLP as well. So it's depending on what we're working on or what the client is going through, I use different.
Yeah, I think it would be just huge to have that kind of support. And just, you know, when you are getting sucked back in and you know you're addicted to this cycle, just to have people say, whoa, been there. Yeah. Don't do it, girl. Yeah,
absolutely. But even people who are now, you know, out of that and don't have any sort of, you know, temptation of going back, they might still have some self-doubt, you know, still being there, because obviously it's a deeply traumatic experience. And when you go in the community and you say, oh, today this is the way I feel, having people there that they know the reason why you're feeling like that, the reason why that self-doubt is there, it's just so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they've been through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So beautiful. I think it's beautiful what you're doing. Can you just give us, you know, one last word of advice to anyone listening that should reach out or join your group or maybe is wondering if they're going through it?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, if you have an ounce of doubt, give yourself the benefit of the doubt. If there is a question mark there that you're not sure, go see it. Because that's your instinct. That's your true self telling you that something isn't right. So definitely go and have a look at what it is. Don't dim that light. Don't just brush it off. Go and have a look. What's that thing within? And what does it want to tell you? And then I would like to leave with a massive realization that I had, which is what has actually then made me want to do this kind of work. It's a butterfly effect. We are talking today, you and I are having a conversation, and we don't know where this is going to go. We don't know who's going to listen to it, how many people. We don't know who's going to hear this. But it can hear one person that is going through exactly this, and their life can change. And that person, by changing their life, by doing the work that they need to do, and by healing, is going to put themselves out there in a very different way. It is going to inspire other people, and it's going to come across somebody in their life, or many people perhaps, that whose life are going to be changed because that person made a change, right? And it's all about the knock-on effect. So it's so much greater than you. It's not only about you. By healing, you are literally changing the world. So please know that, because it's never, ever, ever about you. There's such a, so much more there. So, so, so much more.
That's so beautiful, Gloria. I believe that in the big picture, that, mm-hmm. you know, even the situation we're in, the only way out is to truly heal and light our own light.
Yeah.
And that is what will change the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like you're saying, there's such a ripple effect that we have no idea, and just how many lives you touch when you transform inside.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't even have to be somebody who listens to this and decides to make the change themselves, but it could be that somebody listens and they know someone and they say, "Oh, I've just listened to that." And they just say something about a red flag, and that person all of a sudden becomes aware of what they're going through.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even have to be the full change straight away. It can just be just putting the awareness there. That's what's going to change the world. 100%. I believe in that. So
beautiful. I often contemplate how we come into this world alone. We leave this world alone. And here we're cut off from really feeling that true connection that we crave, right? So
yeah,
it's that craving that sometimes gets us into trouble, when really we should back off from it and focus on our own inner light.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to change the world, you've got to look in the mirror.
Yeah. And it's not easy. I think that's what I'm saying. It's hard on this planet.
Do you know what? I actually, I was having this conversation recently about the it's not easy and everything. I think this is what's scaring people a lot, because the inner work, sometimes it's talked about in a way that it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, it's going to be bad at some point, it's going to be dark. And then I'm like, of course people don't want to do it. Look what pictures you're painting. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it is true. I mean, there are some hard things there, but come on, you're still going in to know yourself. There is nothing that is more beautiful than that. There is nothing. There is no amount of tears that can compare to the joy that you're going to have by knowing who you are. It is a joyful experience. It's a transformation. It's just.
Yeah. And I agree, Gloria, so much that even in my own work, I find so many are afraid to go inside and truly heal because they think it's so difficult. But that short period of looking at it and learning from it is just golden. And what mm-hmm. you come out so different. But yeah, we all have fear of facing it. Maybe that's what it is.
But it's don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid of yourself. It's just for anyone who's listening, it's you. You cannot harm yourself. You cannot. If you give the space to the person that you truly are, that's the road to happiness. It cannot lead anywhere else. If you don't feel happy, it means that you've not arrived. Yeah. It means that the journey isn't finished. So keep going, keep going, keep going. I assure you, I promise you 100%, they will be the most fulfilling thing you can ever do in your life.
Yeah, I love what you said, that you can't harm yourself.
No, you can't harm yourself by being who you are. Not at all.
Yeah, so you can trust this process.
Yes, 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 yes.
Beautiful. And so we're going to share how to connect to you in the description.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a website? Is that the easiest way for people to find you?
Yeah. So I hang out a lot on Instagram. I have a lot of content there, a lot of information. specifically about narcissistic abuse and everything. And I am really connected to my community. I literally ask them, they vote what I'm going to talk about each week. So I literally ask them, what do you want to cover? And they're very, it's very interactive. I really, really love it. So I hang out a lot there. You can find me there at Gloria Bettini. But my website is theselfmasterycoach.co.uk.
Perfect. We'll include both of those so they can find you easily. Thank you so much, Gloria. Thank you for sharing and lighting a candle and being who you are.
Thank you so much for having me, James. It's a huge opportunity. Thank you.
And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out.